In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Friday, June 21st, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. And the return of the Federal News Countdown. Been on hiatus for a couple of weeks, and I am very pleased to have two friends of the show on the Federal News Countdown this week, choosing the three most important federal news stories of the week and counting them down in studio with me. It's Jeff Neal of ICF International. It's good to see you, my friend.
Great to be here.
Just back from vacation,
yes.
You told me. Where were you?
I went to the Napa Valley in California.
That is a good deal. And we talked a little bit about wine before we went on, and we're not going to discuss that at all on the radio. And my colleague Beth Reardon is nodding her head in agreement with that sentiment. And so it's great to see you. Thank you very much
for coming in. I brought a bottle, and we were going to open it and have a drink.
I think we'll do that at 6 o'clock okay. to 7 o'clock tonight. We'll try that.
All right.
Tim McManus, Vice President for Education and Outreach at the Partnership for Public Services, also here in the countdown. It's good to see you, my friend.
Always good to see you.
And you've knocked out graduation season now.
Two down,
and how many to go?
That's it.
You're done?
I'm done.
Oh, so all you're doing is still sending the checks in.
That's right.
All right, terrific. It's great to have you here. Thanks very much for coming in. The three most important federal news stories of the week, as each of my guests has chosen them, is what we're counting down on the show today. And we start where we always do. Jeff, your choice for the third most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. IRS draws new criticism over $70 million employee bonuses. And this is an issue for the IRS, it strikes me, but it's also an issue for the federal government overall as we look at what the selection, the choice the president made to kill bonuses for senior executive service members.
Right. So what we've had in the last few months is this issue regarding the IRS. The SES presidential rank awards going away, and then an OMB memo basically telling people not to do discretionary bonuses. And I think it's not unexpected with all the budget issues, but I do think that these issues of not rewarding employees for good work can have some pretty unpleasant effects down the road. You know, if we've got people who are working very hard in agencies where they may be getting furloughed, they may not be filling as many jobs because of their budget being cut and they're asked to work harder while they're being furloughed, then saying, and if you do a really great job, you'll get a hearty thank you, but we won't give you any kind of bonus, is a problem. The other problem on this one that's kind of an interesting issue for me is this particular one is a bonus program that's in response to a collective bargaining agreement, a contract. And so while at one time we're talking about, and we'll talk about this on a couple of our later stories, about people not keeping their word on keeping classified information classified, and that's a big problem, then why isn't a problem when the federal government doesn't keep its word to a union?
Mm-hmm.
You know, contract is giving your word. We are going to do this. And they're looking at whether or not they want to do what the contract says. That's troubling.
It strikes me that maybe a different approach. This is Chuck Grassley that is proposing that these bonuses be eliminated. And it maybe a different approach could have been looking at the way that the contract was negotiated.
Right.
But this isn't this keeping your word thing or the deal that we've already made is an issue all over the government.
Right.
I mean, we just talked about it this week on this program in terms of the Defense Department and potentially changing the healthcare system mm-hmm. and the retirement system at the Defense Department. So there's a lot of this going around. What does that say, do you think, to the rank and file employees who, although nothing's happened yet, these things are kind of in the background? Mike and I talk all the time about the high three to high five and all of these different things that could happen. What does that breed, do you think?
I think it is, you know, we ask employees to be loyal. Everybody always says they wonder where loyalty in the workplace went. Loyalty is a two-way street. And if organizations want their employees to be loyal to them, then they need to be loyal to their employees. And when you say to an employee, we will do X in return for you doing Y, when the employee does Y, then you should do what you said you would do. And I understand the budget issues, and I understand that there might be a need for some retirement changes at some point, probably for people who are a long way away from retiring. But I'm particularly concerned when you have a contract that says you will do something, that an agency might want to say, well, no, we don't want to do what's in the contract. I think contracts are sacred documents. And when you sign a contract, imagine if your mortgage company said, you know, we gave you a 4% interest rate, but we've decided now we'd like to have 10%. Give us 10%. You know, I don't think you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it troubles me when people don't want to honor a contract with a union. Some folks look at that and say, well, it's a union contract, so it's somehow tainted.
Mm.
It's a contract. It's a contract, and the union is the employees. So it's a contract with your workforce. And you would think of all things, you would want to honor a deal you made with your own workforce.
Your third most important federal news story of the week is headlined, IRS draws new criticism over $70 million employee bonuses from federalnewsradio.com. And you're right, we will talk about this issue as part of the broader discussion later on in the countdown. Tim, your third most important federal news story of the week is a little frightening, I must say, because there's a graphic that comes along with it. The headline is, why does it take so long to fill top agency slots? And this, I'm holding this up to the microphone, so look at your radio and you can see this sketch of John Palguda.
Courtroom sketch.
I was going to say, I bet you probably had some funny name for this at the partnership this week.
Well, you know, Jeff, when Jeff saw it right away, he said, that's not such a bad depiction of John. So, you know, I've got to believe that is a pretty fair representation of
mugshot. It's like a line drawing like they have in the Wall Street Journal of folks. And this is a terrific interview, I have to say, by Troy Schneider at FCW with your colleague John Palguda. And I guess the thing that I came away from this understanding better was the answer to that question, why does it take so long to fill top agency slots?
Yeah, and I think Jeff just touched on some of those issues. I mean, it's always taken a while, and part of the while that it's taken is with any Senate confirmation or positions that require Senate confirmation is, you know, the confirmation process really by and large is not about whether or not you agree with somebody's policy or not. It's how do you leverage, particularly in this day and age, it's how one side of the aisle leverages the other side of the aisle on a confirmation hearing to get what they need out of something. So I think, you know, if you look back in history, as John kind of does in this article or in his interview, he points out to, you know, when there's been, doesn't necessarily have to be one party or the other who's been in control of the Senate, but when you look at the dialogue, and we've talked about this a dozen times, Francis, when you look at the dialogue and the conversation where actually people are having fruitful conversations towards something, that's actually always sped up the process. So that's one issue. I think the second issue actually really does go to the environment that they're coming into. They're coming into an environment where nobody's good, everybody's doing wrong, nobody's working hard, and along with that, your pay, your compensation, and your benefits are all at risk right now. That's not real great incentive for anybody. I don't care if you're an entry-level person or you're a senior executive. That's not great incentive to come on board with the government. And I think that's actually what some of the process is now. It's not so much just getting through the confirmation process. It's actually getting the really good people, not just the people who will accept, yes, I'll go through the process.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking right now to not at this instant, obviously, but a kind of an ongoing basis with someone who is a candidate for a pretty high-level political appointee position. And that conversation is fascinating to me because it's the first time I've kind of walked through it with somebody, through the nomination process, the vetting background, and all of that stuff. And it really is, it's overwhelming for this person because this person has a full-time job in addition to this full-time job of the confirmation and investigation and vetting and all of that process.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges that not only is that person unfamiliar with it, that there's nobody who's actually helping guide them through the process.
That's exactly correct.
So ultimately, it's all on them to try to figure this out. What can I do? What can I do? What should I say? What shouldn't I say? Nobody's actually helping them navigate the system. And therefore, again, it's incumbent upon the individual more often than not to try to navigate it themselves. And at some point, they say, "Is this really worth it?"
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, particularly again, go back to Jeff's article. You know, then put in issue of bonuses, put in issue of pay, put in issues of morale overall, and say, "Okay, is this really worth going through this entire process?" Basically, feeling like I'm on my own through the process as well. only to get to something where at the end of the day, I'm going to look at like, you know, I'm going to have to take the brunt of everything.
All right. We're going to get into this a lot more throughout the course of the program. This theme seems to feed our entire conversation today. So we'll do that when we continue on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tim McManus's third most important federal news story of the week in the countdowns from FCW. The headline is, why does it take so long to fill top agency slots? You can find a link to that story and the sketch of sketchy John Palguda at Federal News Radio. radio.com/in-depth, and we're back in just a moment.
Recently on Federal News Radio's Federal Tech Talk, sponsored by AT&T.
Today in the studio, we're talking with George Newstrom, Vice President of Dell Services Public, and Jeff Lush, CTO of Dell Services Federal Government, talking about Dell and this new cloud offering.
We as a society are now used to pulling out our smartphones or our tablets and getting access to information instantaneously anywhere. And we're finally moving in that direction. And this cloud, this as-a-service format, is enabling us to do that.
Secure mobile government is here.
Evaluate a department budget at a metro station.
You can now work out in the field with a smartphone and the safety and security of the AT&T network. AT&T extends the cyber defense perimeter of your agency's mobile workforce.
Study new employment stats while teleworking.
Your security is predictive and preventive. Go to att.com/gov/secure to learn how AT&T Mobile Security can safely connect you to both your agency and constituents. AT&T, rethink possible.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
The secret to being successful is never slowing down. Your agency's mission doesn't have a pause button, and with CenturyLink as your trusted technology partner, you don't have to slow down. Their visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions are backed by dedicated responsive support. Pause button not included. To learn more about how CenturyLink keeps you up and rolling 24/7, 365, visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. NIH-funded researchers have recently identified a new compound that can treat both the acute and chronic infection spread by kissing bugs. Dr. Richard Okita at NIH says this is promising because current treatments only helps in the early stages of the infection.
Researchers at Vanderbilt University have developed some compounds that have been curative, both of the acute phase that can kill the parasite and then treat the chronic phase.
He adds this new compound is safe and inexpensive, which he hopes will be very useful for treating this disease in the future. For more on this research, visit www.nigms.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by NIH, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. Delaware Senator Tom Carper explains why he thinks the bipartisan PRIME Act might be just the fix needed to end improper Medicare and Medicaid payments. Plus, the Senate has confirmed a new U.S. trade representative. A veteran of that office analyzes what Michael Froman must do first, second, and third. Those stories and much more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected this week by Jeff Neal of ICF International and Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service. And we are up to
number two.
And a demonstration that great minds think alike, fellas, the second most important federal news story of the week that you both chose in the number two slot is by my colleague Jack Moore and Melissa Dawkins, and the headline is BRAC-like commission proposed to hunt down government cost savings. And this story came out of a conversation on this program from earlier in the week. David Walker, the chairman of the Government Transformation Initiative and former Comptroller General, was in town to testify on Tuesday to the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee about duplication and waste in government, and he came to this program immediately after his testimony. And that conversation essentially revolved around the idea that GTI and David Walker have been pushing for a while, which is to establish a commission, they say in the model of the Hoover Commission, to look at the structure and of the government and duplication and so on. You both chose this as the second most important story of the week. And Jeff, I'm going to start with you. Why did this strike you? Was it something that David Walker said? Was it the fact the committee was looking at this? Or was it something else?
I've thought for a long time that we need a commission like this. When you look at government and you look at the duplication of programs, sometimes the operating programs of agencies, you see duplication. Lots of agencies doing the same thing, giving grants for the same type of thing, for example. And a lot of it is services the government provides to itself, where you see the same service being provided over and over and over and over again. And instead of operating like a government with 1.5 million to million 700,000 employees, we act like a government with 10,000 employees or 20,000 employees. And so it drives up cost, it makes things take longer, and it doesn't help the taxpayers at all. The analogy of the Hoover Commission is actually a great one because the Hoover Commission produced some really good results. GSA, I think, came out of the Hoover Commission to get rid of a lot of duplicate services in government. I don't think you can do it without something like the BRAC, Based Realignment and Closure Commission process. The great thing about the BRAC process was you had a commission that would actually go look at data, make recommendations, and then the Congress and the president had to give it an up or down yay or nay vote. And they couldn't tweak it. And that's what's necessary to make something like this happen. If you look at what happens when you go to a member of Congress, for example, and say, okay, we want to cut, you know, $50 billion out of government. Great. We want to cut $3 billion of it out of your district. No, it's terrible. It's a terrible idea. And so nobody wants a cut that affects their constituents. They only want cuts that affect your constituents. And so that's the problem. And this kind of commission that doesn't let people have the ability to play politics with it and to tweak it so much, I think is very useful. I would argue, though, I would disagree with something that David Walker said, and that's that you should have a commission of people who have no conflict of interest. You can't avoid a conflict of interest on something that affects the entire government. You can't, if you say they can't have anything to do with government at all, you rule out all of the unions, and I would argue that a commission like this should probably have a union president on it. You rule out a lot of academics who get federal grants. You rule out a lot of people in the commercial sector. You rule out a lot of people who are in government right now and have really great ideas on ways to make government better. So I would argue that you would want people who actually have an interest and an understanding in how government works to be on a commission like this.
Tim, when David Walker was on this program and when he was before Congress, the model that he proposed was 7 members. Each of the leaders, Democrat and Republican, and each side of Capitol Hill would get to choose, president would get to choose, and we would have this mix of people. The model that Jeff's talking about, there aren't enough slots to include each of those stakeholders, and yet I think he makes a pretty good case for why they deserve to be included here. And so the converse of that is, the more people you add to the mix, the harder it's going to be to get to some kind of consensus.
Yeah, I think there is a challenge with composition in general. What is that right composition? How many? It's actually a dilemma that a lot of organizations, particularly nonprofit organizations, face with their own board of directors. How large should our board of directors be? How small should it be? You know, how much do we want them in our business, so to speak? I think the same holds true with this. Clearly, you want. I think it probably is somewhere in between. And I hate to just kind of mush it like that, but I think it is somewhere in between. You want to have it a manageable size. But to Jeff's point, you know, nobody's going to be completely conflict free in this.
Right.
It just can't happen. And I don't see a way that that happens anyway. So again, to our last story, where do you set that bar in terms of who's coming in? And let's set the bar at a realistic level so that we can actually have a healthy dialogue and conversation about this. Again, to your question about that you asked Jeff as well, I'd actually add one other thing that drew me to this article in particular is that you know, we've talked about it as a cost-cutting measure to some extent to this point as well. It's really about effectiveness as well. And I think Steve Goldsmith actually makes a really good point, both in the article and in the hearing as well, that this is about, you know, broader civil service reform and rewarding employees appropriately for their performance and allowing the employer, government, to get rid of people who are not performing as well. So this isn't simply about cost-cutting, and I think we need to make sure that that's the way that it's viewed as well. And you know, I was a bit disappointed with the hearing itself that there were as many naysayers out of the blocks as there were, rather than taking a couple steps back and saying, how do we make this work? It might not work on all levels. I mean, as Jeff pointed out, maybe a different composition of the committee, but how do you figure out how it works rather than dismissing it outright?
Well, politically too, I thought Steve Goldsmith's comments were the most interesting because he's a former mayor of Indianapolis and he's a Republican, not somebody Republicans are typically associated with the good government or pro-government employee side of things in general. So I thought his comments were particularly interesting given that he now is at the Kennedy School at Harvard and studies this stuff on an ongoing basis. He's been a guest on the program a number of times talking about all of these issues. So I think his position on all of this and getting to that efficiency and effectiveness piece, maybe it's his experience as a mayor that I think gives him a little bit better insight into that because mayors are so close to the services that governments deliver.
That's the great thing about a mayor or a governor. They've had to be executives.
Yeah.
They've had to live with a budget. They've had to deal with a workforce. They've had to deal with constituents. So they actually understand how to run a government. People who haven't been in an executive position frequently don't really understand the intricacies of running an organization. And so I think mayors and governors in particular tend to understand this stuff really well.
All right, we've got to take a break, but we'll talk more about this commission idea as the second most important federal news story of the week as selected by both Jeff Neal and Tim McManus when the Federal News Countdown continues in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Imagine starting off the day on an empty stomach. Well, thousands of our homeless neighbors do. Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Washington is working to change that through their new Cup of Joe program. They're providing a healthy breakfast for the men and women staying in shelters every morning, and they need your help. Volunteers can bag breakfasts, the perfect activity for a group. Visit CatholicCharitiesDC.org/Joe. It's true. A Cup of Joe is the perfect start to the day.
Welcome to the NGA.net Federal Talent Management Report. I'm Shauna Stewart with the NGA.net Customer Experience Team and formerly with OPM. Federal Times recently reported over 10,000 federal employees submitted retirement claims in March, bringing the first quarter total to over 52,000 employees, almost 51% more than in quarter one of 2012. Check out NGA.net's cloud-based talent management solutions to see how NGA.net can help your agency stay ahead of these trends. NGA.net. Performance you can count on.
The Information Management Minute, provided by Iron Mountain.
Federal agencies are grappling with tighter budgets and exponential information growth. The presidential directive on records management asks agencies to create a government-wide records management framework that is more efficient and cost-effective. Compliance will help agencies transition from paper-based records to electronic records, manage their temporary and permanent records in a compliant manner, and enhance agencies' capability to meet missions and foster open government and the public's access to government records more easily.
Is your agency looking to realize better efficiencies and cost savings through a proven information management program? Iron Mountain stores and protects billions of information assets, including paper records,
backup tapes, electronic files, and medical data, helping federal agencies manage their entire information lifecycle. Learn more at ironmountain.com/radio.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Man up. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Minority men face certain health challenges. Black men have a high risk of dying from heart disease. Latino men are diagnosed with AIDS 3 times as often as white men. But men can do things that can protect their health. Most health plans cover recommended preventive services like screenings at no cost under the health care law. Dr. J. Nadine Gracia is HHS's Deputy Assistant Secretary for Minority Health.
Screenings for blood pressure, blood sugar, and cholesterol and HIV are some of the main tests that will let you know if you're still on the path toward great health.
Taking your health into your own hands also means eating right, being active, and talking about your health with your loved ones.
It's important to know your family health history so you can create a plan with your health care provider.
Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
If you're not reading federalnewsradio.com, you're missing out on the most read website in the federal market, featuring federal news and information that affects you every day. Here's what readers are saying about federalnewsradio.com.
I get absolutely the latest news on time.
Federalnewsradio.com gives federal government workers news about what affects them. I don't have to wade through local news to get to what directly affects me at work.
Make it your daily read for the news you need. Federalnewsradio.com.
Now for your Federal News Radio cybersecurity update. Afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour. The first U.S. cybersecurity camp of the summer opens on Monday in Roanoke, Virginia. Invited participants had to earn their way in through an online competition. Planned activities include a cyber attack defense competition, a tactical attacks course, and a career fair. You get your cybersecurity update afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. It's the Federal News Countdown with the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Jeff Neal and Tim McManus. Both of you choosing at number two this week, the federalnewsradio.com story headlined Brackleight Commission Proposed to Hunt Down Government Cost Savings. And Jeff, you talked a little bit about the only real argument that I've heard against this in Congress, which is, well, this is Congress's job. This is what Congress should be doing. And the counter to that seems to be, well, but you're not doing it. So, and you mentioned the BRAC comparison, which we've heard on a number of occasions when it comes to this story.
It's interesting, though, because you're right. This actually is a job that Congress should do. But we, for a variety of reasons, don't have the kind of productive work going on in Congress that you would expect. Instead of having a dialogue, like Tim mentioned earlier, we have side-by-side monologues. And so there's no chance that Congress would deal very effectively with something like this. And Congress doesn't want another BRAC commission either. Even though most people who've been in the Department of Defense for a long time would look at the Department of Defense infrastructure, and DOD themselves say this, and say the infrastructure is too big for the force that we have now and the force that we need in the future. And so we really need to look at these things. But they're very hard because a member of Congress who's going to be, particularly in the House, a member of the House who has to stand for election every 2 years is going to have to go back and say, I voted for something that may cause the base here, which is the biggest employer in town, to close. And that's a really tough sell for them. And so I understand that. If I were a member of Congress, I wouldn't want to go back home and say, hey, I voted to get rid of 10,000 jobs in the district. Please reelect me.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at what's right for the country and what's right for the people of this country, it's to have a government that works well at the lowest possible cost. And so you want a good government, but you don't want to spend a lot of money, any more money than necessary getting it. It's always going to cost a lot of money. It's going to cost $1 trillion, but you multiple trillions of dollars. But you need to do it in a way that makes sense.
Tim, go back to what we talked about in the last segment, the idea that this is not just about cost savings, although that's an important element of it, but it's also about efficiency and effectiveness. And any thoughts about how we keep the focus on that part of it? Because given the budget situation that we're in, that's probably always going to be issue one, but the others could be 1A and B, the effectiveness and efficiency.
So I think actually Jeff touched on it when we started this segment, when he said, you know, this is when we look at duplication across government. So you can look at that in two different lights. You can look at that simply from a financial perspective and say duplication of efforts. Same type of organizations that are trying to provide a service around X. So there's a cost savings measure in that, but let's all it really requires is just a little bit of a change of the lens, which is don't look at it at first as the cost savings. Look at it as how we better provide that service. So I'll use an example that I've used with you before, Francis, because they were Sammy's finalists and winners, which was the VA and HUD in their work in homelessness, veterans homelessness. Two agencies both trying to achieve the same thing. What did they do? In that case, they didn't eliminate a program at VA or eliminate a program at HUD. What they did is they came together, they worked better, more collaboratively to actually help solve an issue. And they reduce veterans' homelessness as a result of their collaboration and work together. By the way, that's exactly what this commission is about, finding better, more effective, and efficient ways of doing it. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, both VA and HUD save money in doing this as well.
The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by both of my experts this week, Tim McManus and Jeff Neal. FederalNewsRadio.com's story headlined, BRAC-like commission proposed to hunt down government cost savings. And you can read it now on FederalNewsRadio.com/in-depth. The most important story of the week is selected by both Tim and Jeff when we come back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and FederalNewsRadio.com.
Systems, we realize it's critical that our armed forces can get the job done, even when budgets are tight. That's why our engineers created the technology to transform an unguided munition into a precision laser-guided rocket, the perfect low-cost surgical strike solution. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day, so we'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
Soldiers returning with traumatic brain injuries or other serious battle wounds often spend weeks or months in a VA hospital or other rehab facility. DVDs for Vets is collecting DVDs and portable players for distribution in our community and nationwide. Many of us take for granted our access to everyday enjoyments, and DVDs for Vets needs your help in giving these injured soldiers some diversions from the monotony of a hospital stay during recovery. To donate new or used DVDs or to learn more about this worthy cause, please go to www.dvdsforvets.org.
Hamid Jafari eradicated polio in India. John McKinnon rescued 160 victims of child pornography. And Kevin Geis saved the Air Force $1 billion in energy costs. The list of federal employees making a real difference goes on and on. 31 individuals and teams of feds are being recognized for their work. Each has been named a Service to America Medal finalist. Hear interviews with each of the nominees and learn more about what makes them tick at federalnewsradio.com. Search Service to America.
If you know someone who's done something outstanding in the field of human capital management, nominate them for Federal News Radio's 4th Annual COSI Awards. Help us call attention to best practices in your office and government-wide. You can nominate anyone, career, political, or a contractor working in the HR field. The award is named after Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike COSI and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the COSI Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search COSI Award.
You're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now your DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour. Marine Attack Squadron 231 is being recognized for its perfect flying skills. It's flown 30,000 consecutive hours without any mishaps for the first time in the squadron's history. VMA 231 is 94 years old and the Marine Corps' oldest flight squadron. Boeing presents an award to flight squadrons every 10,000 hours of mishap-free flying. You get your DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Countdown this week with the most important stories of the week is selected by Jeff Neal and Tim McManus, and we are at the top of the chart.
Number one.
Jeff Neal's most important federal news story of the week is Jack Moore's federalnewsradio.com story headlined Contractor Conducting Background Checks Under Investigation Prior to NSA Leak. And Jeff, this actually fits on one level with a couple of concepts that we talked about earlier in the program, the keeping your word thread, and also the government employee versus contractor, not bashing maybe, but just the cloud hanging over everyone thread too.
Yeah, this one is one that I think is really interesting on a lot of different levels. Obviously, you have the sexy part of the story, which is this release of massive amounts of classified information and disclosure of a surveillance program that's probably broader than a lot of people expected it to be. So that's one level of it. Then you get into the whole clearance issue and who has clearances and who doesn't have clearances. You get into the feds versus contractors issue. In this particular case, this guy had had a clearance for a long time. And like most of these big releases of classified information or spy-type cases, most of them are people who are either doing it for money or ideology. And it's hard to actually figure that out based on the typical security clearance process. So maybe the clearance process isn't looking for the right things. Maybe it should be looking for something else. And then you get into the contractor versus Fed issue. And some folks say, well, because this guy worked for booze, not for alcohol, for the company, because he worked for booze, this was a contractor issue. But he was an employee of NSA for a lot longer than he was a contractor employee. And then you get into this question of federal employees or contractors disclosing classified information. And some people will say, okay, this guy had something that people needed to know, and so he disclosed it. Let's say you buy that. I don't think I do, but let's say you buy that. Who gets to decide what classified information should be released to the press? Now, I'm sure that being on the press side of it, you'd be in favor of more disclosure of things to the press, particularly,
I am a fan, yes.
Particularly exclusives to Francis Rose.
I love those the best.
But I don't think I want millions of people who might have classified information deciding on their own which things they want to disclose and which ones they don't want to disclose. That I think is going a bit too far.
Well, and my impression of the whole classification process and background check process was that they were checking to make sure that the people didn't tend to be the kinds of folks that were likely to release that kind of information, which was why it was classified in the first place, because it was information that was supposed to be kept secret for one reason or another.
Right.
So it kind of defeats the whole purpose of that. The only element of this story that I find fascinating that Jeff didn't touch on, Tim, is the badge flipping idea. That this guy was an employee of the National Security Agency and then left the agency, went to become a contractor that was contracted back to the NSA. And this is something you and I have talked about before, the perception of that. And then you could take it into the whole inherently governmental space, which we haven't yet, and there's just a million different dimensions or layers to this story.
Yeah, on the badge flipping side of things, I mean, I think while that's a concern, we better darn well get used to it within the government space, because people aren't going to go and work for government forever. People aren't going to work for the same contractor. So, this is an issue that we are actually going to have to deal with. So I think, again, it does relay back a little bit to Jeff's issue one about, who says what's confidential or what's top secret and what's classified and declassified, and also the issue of is this in general the work that was actually performed, is that, to your point, is that inherently governmental, is it not? Who's best positioned to actually do that work?
The most important federal news story of the week selected by Jeff Neal is my colleague Jack Moore's story on federalnewsradio.com about the NSA leak scandal. Where do you see this going, and what impact do you think this might have on the workforce, Jeff. It doesn't look on the surface like a workforce story, and yet as we talk about these various layers and peel them away, it turns into one, it seems.
I think this is a perfect example of a Washington story. If you don't like contractors, this story is about the evil contractor. Mm. If you don't like government surveillance, this story is about the big bad government. If you don't like the clearance process, it's about that. And so everybody who's got a particular axe to grind is using this story to further their own point of view. And I think you'll see a lot of that. I also think in this particular case, Mr. Snowden has a big mouth, given that he disclosed a lot of classified information. But he also has kept on talking. And the more he keeps talking, the worse he makes himself look. And he's looking pretty bad right now. He's looking like maybe this that's not all about him is getting to be all about him.
His own dad has told him to shut up stop doing this.
So I think at some point he's going to become much more of the story than the surveillance program itself or the contractor issue or any of the others. And on the contractor issue, by the way, I think if I remember correctly looking back at a story on this, about 90% of these things that have been done in recent years have been done by federal employees, not by contractors.
Tim, final thought on this?
The other thing that's really interesting in this, I think, particularly in the clearance process question, and again, Jeff, I think you're right, that depending upon your ilk, you can come at this from any way. To me, there's an inherent question or issue with this perpetual quality versus quantity issue, and it's playing out here, you know,
right.
Hugely increased number of folks that we need to give clearances to, a timeline that's set actually by Congress to actually get those things done, and again, what we're looking for. And I think that plays out. We talk about it in this example, but how many times, Francis, have you and I talked about that as it plays out with, mm-hmm. with the hiring process,
yeah.
which is focus on time, focus on volume, and focus on the wrong things and actually selecting the things. I think we actually have to take two or three steps back and say, how much is it on the process? Mm-hmm. And we really need to focus on quality at the end of the day, because otherwise it doesn't matter what job they're doing, where they are, we're in for a world of hurt.
Jeff Neal's most important federal news story of the week is linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It's Jack Moore's story headlined, Contractor Conducting Background Checks Under Investigation Prior to NSA Leak. And you can find it and all of our stories on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Only one more. Tim McManus's most important story of the week is next to wrap up this federal news countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose. Technical and Management Resources, or TMR, is proud to announce their recent preliminary award under the Department of Homeland Security's Eagle II contract. As part of the Eagle II award, TMR will propose and compete on task orders associated with the Functional Category 2 Small Business Track. Founded in 1998 and located in the D.C. metro area, TMR is an IT services company offering professional engineering, planning, and implementation support to federal government agencies and corporate clients. Visit TMRHQ.com to learn more.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington. Great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Secure mobile government is here.
Review a patent application at breakfast. Run through a field report while in the field.
Almost anything you can do behind a desk, you can now do out in the field with a smartphone. And the safety and security of the AT&T network.
Update a case report at a bus station.
AT&T extends the cyber defense perimeter of your agency's mobile workforce.
Read risk assessments at a remote site.
So you can now be productive anywhere while knowing your security is predictive and preventive, safeguarding your data.
Collaborate with multiple agencies anywhere.
All on a network whose security is constantly monitored and in real time.
View grant applications from a coffee shop.
Secure mobile government is here. Go to att.com/gov/secure to learn how AT&T Mobile Security can safely connect you to both your agency and constituents.
Make the world your worksite.
AT&T. Rethink possible.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight is the Washington Animal Rescue League, one of the nation's premier animal rescue organizations. They save the lives of thousands of dogs and cats each year and place them with families throughout our area. Hundreds of pets are up for adoption at their state-of-the-art shelter right now. The League is also home to a full-service pet medical center. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. And the Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour features two experts in the world of the federal government choosing their three most important federal news stories of the week. They rank them in order from number 3 to number 1, and we count them down every Friday. Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service is here along with Jeff Neal of ICF International. And Tim, your choice for the most important federal news story of the week is Kelly Lunny's story from GovExec, headlined, "Majority of Feds Don't Believe Agencies Will Reward or Promote Them." This is your organization, the Partnership for Public Service, in collaboration with Deloitte, looking at the best places to work in the federal government survey and the numbers that the Office of Personnel Management collected, the data in the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. Dave Dye from Deloitte was on the program yesterday talking about these issues. And this is another one of these stories that you look at it from so many different angles and you see something different in every different way you look at it.
Yeah, so first, again, the background on the story is that less than half of federal employees actually feel like they or believe that they'll be rewarded or promoted for doing a good job. And as we were talking at the break here, the interesting thing about that is this is based on the 2012 FEVS, Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. So we can imagine with another year of pay freezes, furloughs, everything else that folks have been hit with over the past year, what does that number look like right now? Mm-hmm. And to that, I think, you know, the other part of the conversation that we had was if you look at the rankings of agencies by this factor, there's a little bit of shift based on the overall best places to work ranking, but the shifts are pretty slight. And I think Jeff appropriately indicated that, one, you'll see some fairly significant shifts in this one in general and in some other categories as well. But you may see some pretty dramatic shifts within agencies as well, particularly if they're hit harder than others with furloughs than some of the others.
I mentioned to Dave when I had him on the show that a couple of the things that struck me about this, that the most interesting part to me was the table at the end that lists all the agencies in order, ranks them in order of the final results. I noticed that those lists seem to be pretty standard for all of the categories. If employees that weren't satisfied with their pay and benefits and so on weren't satisfied at the same agency in a number of other areas too. Those lists look very similar. There also wasn't much of a swing year on year. I told you guys during the break, I saw a lot of point somethings plus or minus, or 1 point somethings plus or minus, but there were hardly any double digit swings as far as improvements. And to be fair, there were hardly any double digit swings as far as the agencies moving down too. But that just indicated to me that we're kind of stuck in the mud, Tim.
Yeah, a little bit, but also I'd say the reason, one of the reflections, and I think it's no surprise at all that the agencies that appear on here in the rank order that they do almost do mirror the overall best places, is because if you look at overall best places rankings, the number one driver of employee satisfaction really across the board is leadership. So if you've got really good leadership is actually trying to figure out ways right now, money or no money, how they actually motivate and try to keep morale up. Now, is it a harder job for them right now? Absolutely. But they're actually looking creatively at, we may not be able to provide bonuses anymore, but how do we still give a meaningful attaboy that somebody can then go back to their desk, feel good about the job that they're doing, and take the next step forward as well. They're actually trying to figure out how we still create some type of path for entry-level folks who are coming into the organization, that they see a light at the end of the tunnel, that in 3 or 4 years, here's where I may be, because we may not be able to invest in external training, but we're figuring out internally how we can provide mentoring and things of that sort. So I think, again, this is a reflection of leadership really is key, and I think you can see that by looking at the list of agencies in the rank order there.
Jeff, you've been on the receiving end of this kind of data at a number of different positions in your career. He's hitting his chest with his fist as he's doing that. What do you do when you see this stuff, regardless of whether the numbers are good or bad? How do you consume this information and decide how it is that you're going to act on it in one form or another?
Well, I think you have to look at the data to see where the problems actually are. If you just look at big averages, they don't tell you a whole lot. So in an agency like DLA or like DHS, you have to start drilling down in the data as far as you possibly can. And was 2012 a census?
That was 2012 was the first census, yes.
And that was really important, incredibly important that OPM did a census, all federal employees, not just a sample, because that allows you to drill down very far in the organization. Mm-hmm. When I was at DLA, for example, we used to look like we were sort of in the middle of the road. If you looked at certain field activities, they were horrible. Other field activities were great. Parts of the headquarters were horrible. Other parts were great. And so going and treating everybody the same way doesn't help. Well, you know, it's like giving all of us the same medicine for an ailment when only one of us has it. It's a waste of money. And so you really have to drill down as far as you possibly can. And what I would strongly encourage, and I would hope the partnership will encourage OPM to do, is on the next FEVS, do a census again, because it's incredibly important to get that level of information and that level of detail.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service, is from GovExec. The headline is, "Majority of Feds Don't Believe Agencies Will Reward or Promote Them." It is just one of the stories on this week's Federal News Countdown that you can find later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And our program today is archived there, so you can listen to it whenever you want. Jeff Neal of ICF International, great to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm happy to do it. And Tim McManus of the Partnership, you're going to stick around a little bit, and we'll talk a little bit more later on in the next hour of In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.